Let's read Belgic Confession Article 14, The Creation and Fall of Man and His Incapacity to perform what is truly good. We believe that God created man out of the dust of the earth and made and formed him after his own image and likeness. Good, righteous, and holy, capable in all things to will agreeably to the will of God. But being in honour, he understood it not, neither knew his excellency, but wilfully subjected himself to sin, and consequently to death and the curse, giving ear to the words of the devil. For the commandment of life which he had received he transgressed, and by sin separated himself from God, who was his true life, having corrupted his whole nature, whereby he made himself liable to corporal and spiritual death. And being thus become wicked, perverse, and corrupt in all his ways, he hath lost all his excellent gifts which he had received from God, and retained only a few remnants thereof, which, however, are sufficient to leave man without excuse. For all the light which is in us is changed into darkness, as the Scriptures teach us, saying, The light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not, where St. John calleth men darkness. Therefore we reject all that is taught repugnant to this concerning the free will of man, since man is but a slave to sin, and has nothing of himself, unless it is given from heaven. For who may presume to boast that he of himself can do any good, since Christ saith, No man can come to me, except the Father which has sent me draw him. Who will glory in his own will, who understands that to be carnally minded is enmity against God? Who can speak of his knowledge, since the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God? In short, who dare suggest any thought, since he knows that we are not sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but that our sufficiency is of God? And therefore what the Apostle saith ought justly to be held sure and firm, that God worketh in us both to will and to do of his good pleasure. For there is no will nor understanding conformable to the divine will and understanding, but what Christ hath wrought in man, which he teacheth us when he saith, Without me ye can do nothing. Now you may have noticed that the three parts of the title of Belgic Confession 14 summarize well and in order the contents of the article. I'll explain what I mean. The title begins, The Creation. And sentence one deals with the creation. We believe that God made man of the dust of the earth, after his own image and likeness, good, righteous, and holy, and capable in all things to will the will of God. And we spent the last 4 weeks on that. By the way, I want to throw in an additional argument for dichotomy, the truth that man consists of two parts or aspects or elements, that man is not merely or purely physical or material. We said that man is both body and soul or spirit because that's the way God created him, formed of the dust, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, so that man became a living soul, the two aspects. We said that man is two because at the end of his life, we enter the intermediate state. We in our bodies decay in the grave, and with our souls we go to be with Christ, and the same with Christ, who committed his spirit to God, where his body was laid in the grave for 3 days. We said that this is the way the key words are used, but I want to throw this in now. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians 12, 2 through 3. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 2 and 3. Paul here, in refuting those who attacked him and his office and his preaching, explains how the Lord had honored him, yet he didn't want to boast in himself, so he speaks very circumspectly. I knew a man in Christ about 14 years ago whether in the body, I cannot tell, or whether out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth, such an one caught up to the third heaven. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth. And then it goes on to say that this man was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. Which of course exposes as false all the nonsense from the lying prophets of the Pentecostals and Charismatics, who tell you that they've gone up to heaven, and then they tell you everything they've seen. Whereas the Apostle Paul, who actually did go there, he said, it's not lawful even to tell you what I saw. But these guys, they know a lot better than the inspired apostle. But what we want to note now, though, is that Paul says, whether I saw these things in heaven in the body or outside of the body, this presupposes and even requires that Paul, in his soul or spirit, can be separate from the body. And that would not be possible if Paul were, or if man in general, were entirely physical or material. If we were not consisting of two parts, body and soul or spirit, there could be no life after death, there could be no communion with God, and there certainly would have been no possibility of an out-of-body experience recorded by the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Anyway, Article 14, Sentence 1 deals with the creation. And then, Article 14, the next part of the title says the creation and fall of man. And that bit dealing with the fall of man begins immediately after the first sentence and takes up the rest of that first paragraph. Creation is the first sentence, the creation of man. The fall of man is the remainder of the first paragraph. And that's what we're going to look at tonight and next week too. And then the second paragraph is that contained in the heading, the creation fall of man, and his incapacity to form what is truly good. That's the second half of the second paragraph of Belgic Confession 14. And you'll notice too, the order of these three aspects of anthropology. And anthropology, a long word, perhaps intimidating, simply means the study of man. Anthropos being the Greek word for man. These three aspects of anthropology are chronological. That is, in point of view of time, the creation of man, then in time the fall of man, and then after that, his incapacity to perform what is truly good. That's the historical order. And it is also the logical order. Man can't fall unless he is created. And man is only unable to do what is good after he has fallen, and as a fallen creature. So the study of man involves his creation, his fall, and now his incapacity of doing anything truly good, that is his total depravity. This is what it is for us as Reformed Christians on the basis of the Bible to know man and to know ourselves. We know ourselves as created, we know ourselves as fallen, and we know ourselves as totally depraved. Thankfully, there's more to know about ourselves than this, redeemed in Jesus Christ and even glorified, but that's not the subject of Article 14. Now, our subject tonight deals with what we may call, first of all, the direction of man. The direction of man. And the Christian faith teaches that after man was originated, his direction was up, down, left, or right. Down. So man was created. He didn't go up. He didn't even stay level, although obviously for a while he did before he fell. But he went down. He went down, of course, not in point of view of his height, but in point of view of morally, ethically, spiritually, man went down. We are not the way we once were. We're not staying at the same level, but mankind died. Now, and here we differ radically with a very popular contemporary view. A view which holds that man's direction is up. And this view that holds that man's direction is up is
humanism.
I heard humanism there and evolutionism. And humanism today grows out of evolutionism. You're both right, because you're essentially saying the same thing. Evolutionism. We'll give it a capital E for my notes on the blackboard. According to evolutionism, man hasn't fallen at all. Man is not fallen. Man has risen. According to evolutionism, man is not fallen. He's not a fallen man. He's a developing ape. And those are the two choices, by and large, in our society and in this church. You're either a fallen man, now redeemed in Christ, or a developing ape. And that's, of course, the origin of the phrase uttered by a previous British Prime Minister, Benjamin Disraeli, dealing with evolutionism. He said that man is either an ape or he's on the side of the angels. And I, said Disraeli, am on the side of the angels. He was saying, tipping his hat somehow or other to a more biblical view of man. He, of course, was a Jew who converted to Anglicanism and became the Prime Minister of Great Britain. So evolutionism says man's not fallen, man's a developing ape. And according to evolutionism, the direction is onwards and upwards. Onwards and upwards. Man started off as a lower life form, developed eventually through millions of years and time and chance into apes, and then lower forms of ape men, and then man, and higher forms of Homo sapiens and Homo sapiens sapiens and all the rest of it. Now, man is, even according to the evolutionary worldview, at the current state of which he is today, right? What is his direction today? For evolutionism, what is man's direction? And obviously we can rule out left or right, although his direction is left, politically. But morally, is his direction up or down?
By our view of the world.
By evolutionary view. It's up. It's up. It's always been up. And it's going up still further. It's going up. And now, in the development of evolutionary man, man has a view of how man can speed up his evolutionary ascent. And this is what the top scientists, or at least many of them, and the civil governments of the world are working on. How are we going to speed up man's evolutionary ascent?
By getting rid of those who would hold you back.
Okay.
Those who would be disabled or too old or survival doesn't fit us.
Eugenics. For Hitler, that meant killing the Jews and the blacks and so forth. Eugenics, abortion, killing any children that are disabled.
Euthanasia,
because you're wasting limited, finite resources upon those who are of no benefit to society, as it seems. This is the view of Hitler. This is the view that shapes the social policy of the current president of the United States, Barack Obama. And the one word which encapsulates all of this is
survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest, yep. That's another word, although it's a phrase. Scientism. Scientism. And that's our word. Scientism. They make a god out of it. Science is what they would call it. So the way in which we can speed up man's ascent,
you know, if you've got a graph, X and Y, and it's going up like this, that's one thing, but what you really want is, you know, go up even quicker.
The way to speed up man's evolutionary ascent is science. Science discovered evolutionism, according to their worldview, and science can now help man evolve. Now that man has evolved to a certain point, he can use science to speed up his ascent. Science explains man's origins and furthers man's development, and science is saying today a new form of the old lie, ye shall be as gods. You have endless potential. We're on the way up, and we can help you. And since, of course, science is man's labor, man explains man's origin. God doesn't explain man's origin. Man explains and furthers man's development, and man makes himself as a god without God. The Tower of Babel and the Garden of Eden all over again. Man is not in the image of God. Man is in the image of himself. Man is in the image of an ape. Man is an image of an ape.
But they use the word moral with the
moral?
It's not really moral that they're focusing on, is it? When you're saying a bit of man ascending upwards, it's more intellect rather than morally. Or would they tap in on that as well? How do they explain that? The moral side of things, whenever they turn and seek to debate people who would stand for some moral future.
Well, as Christians, knowing that man is both body and soul, and given the biblical anthropology of heart and mind and will, we know what things like conscience are. Conscience and guilt and forgiveness and death and the fear of death and peace. Well, in the evolutionary framework, everything has to be explained, or better, reduced to chemical reactions and electrical impulses. Everything has to be explained in a naturalistic, materialistic worldview, in keeping with ideas like the survival of the fittest. So conscience isn't the fact that man's made a rational, moral creature and knows guilt because God leaves himself not without a witness in man's heart. Conscience, they would try and explain, is something like, you've got to do what's good in order to help the group, because the group will help you. So you don't hurt other people because they might hurt you, and this improves your survival chances. That type of thing. There's various differences amongst them, and can get a bit complicated, but that's how they've got to do it. They've got to reduce it to time and matter. And it's a reductionist worldview. It's a very dry, boring, dead worldview, and it kills people inside, and it kills people too, spiritually. Now, moving away from the hopelessness of evolutionism, we come back to the image of God. The image of God, and particularly two erroneous views of the image of God, which divide the image of God, and which then affect the fall. Roman Catholicism separates the image of God and the likeness of God. The image of God is one thing, and the image and the likeness of God is something else, something different. The image of God, according to Roman Catholicism, are man's natural endowments. That man, unlike animals, reasons, wills, thinks, has a personality, and so forth. That's the image of God. And the likeness of God consists of righteousness, holiness, and knowledge. So this one is natural,
And righteousness, holiness, and knowledge is supernatural or spiritual.
Now, how good is your Roman Catholic theology? Roman Catholicism has a Latin phrase for this likeness of God, and it is called the Donum Superadditum. Donum. What do you think donum means? Not to do with donuts. Donum. D-O-N-U-M. It comes from the word, well, we get our word donate from it. A gift. The donum, the gift, superadditum. You don't need to know Latin, you just need to know English. Super, above and beyond. Additum, a super add. It's a super added gift. Man is made in the image of God with natural endowments, and in comes the likeness of God, the donum super additum. So man's made in the image of God, and then he gets this super added gift of righteousness, knowledge, and holiness. Now, and when the fall comes, he loses the likeness of God and keeps the image of God. Now, if you just take the Roman Catholic view of the image of God, excluding the likeness of God, would you say that is positive, negative, or neutral, ethically, morally? Positive, negative, or neutral? Man in the image of God, is he positive, ethically, negative, ethically, or neutral, ethically? Neutral. Neutral. Man created in the image of God is neutral. He can go either way, according to the Roman Catholic view. And the strange thing is, and this appears to us as really weird, that Roman Catholic theologians, and especially Bellarmine, a cardinal in the Roman Church, they used to call him the daddy of the papists because he was very capable, he was their cheerleader of that age. He said that man in the image of God, even as created, was disordered, diseased, possessing languor, in need of a remedy, and it was not the ideal situation at all. So man's not only neutral as created in the image of God, but he's slightly negative. And I won't let you think about that, because you've got to pause and think, what a weird view.
Just to clarify, position is the one that is taken with regards to Adam, and then when he fell, the likeness of God was lost.
Yeah, likeness of God was lost.
They don't say every man's created that way.
Yes, every man then takes, this is the way every man comes into the world, and he's lost this righteousness, holiness, and knowledge.
He's lost the second part.
He's lost the second part, yep. But he keeps the first part. The second part goes, when Adam falls, the second part goes for him after the fall, although God regenerates and saves him, but we'll set that aside for a minute. And this is the way we're born, without the likeness of God, righteousness, holiness, and knowledge, but in the image of God. And then you see, these natural endowments, the image of God includes the will, which for Roman Catholicism means free will. Man can do some good. And with that free will, used rightly, man can merit. And man can establish his own salvation. So the image of God has a different content from the likeness of God. And the image of God itself is neutral. And because man is a soul and a body, and there's always something kind of dodgy about the body and the soul are not perfectly related, there's a certain problem inside man. Now, here's another view which distinguishes, and not just distinguishes, but separates the image and likeness of God. That's the Roman Catholic view, that's view one. It's Pelagianism. Boy, we're coming up with a lot of big words tonight. Apologize for that, we didn't do it on purpose. Pelagianism. And Pelagianism is a system named after a man called Pelagius. And does anybody know where Pelagius came from?
Egypt.
Sorry?
Egypt.
Egypt, no.
It was Greek.
No.
German.
No.
He
was a Brit. He was British. Now, if the Dutch have their Arminius, we have our Pelagius. Remember saying to Mary that if Prof. Dijkstra in my church history or historical theology question asked me who Pelagius was, we don't want him. I'm going to say he was a European. And he did ask that question. So I just said, where was Pelagius from? He was a European. And Dijkstra just raised his eyebrows and didn't say any more, just went on. So, Pelagianism. This one makes a temporal distinction. By temporal, I'm doing the time. Man was created in the image of God, but he's not yet in the likeness of God. Man's created in the image of God, and if he uses his free will and struggles for a long enough time, he will grow into and develop into the likeness of God. What do you think of that? It surely is. It surely is. He wasn't the likeness of God as created. He had to grow in it and develop. Mary, you want to say that?
Well, I was just wondering, how do the Roman Catholics say we can get the likeness back? Or don't they say we can? Do they say free will give you back the likeness?
Yes. We retain the image of God. That means we still get will, which for them is essentially free will. Then we can merit, and we can get back the likeness of God.
So the only difference between the two is just that they weren't created with that?
Yeah, in Pelagianism, man is created in the image of God, and with time he can come into the likeness of God. Roman Catholicism said man is created as image of God, and then this donum, he sort of gets two gifts, one immediately after the other. The likeness of God comes to him, whenever he falls, he loses the likeness of God, but he retains the image of God. But if he uses the image of God rightly, he can get back the likeness of God.
Almost the same thing.
Well, they're both saying the same thing that they're wrong. They're both saying the same thing, and they both are all about free will. They're both saying the same thing, in that man, by his own efforts, can get back the likeness of God, and that they're both distinguishing, not just, but separating and dividing the two. But there are some slight differences. Yeah. So the fall for Pelagianism meant that Adam fell into sin, but he did it individually, and for himself alone. Adam fell. Just not the whole human race. Just Adam. So we sin. They admit that. That's too obvious to admit. We sin, but we do not sin according to the Pelagian system, because Adam was our representative head and we fell in him. But we sin, not because we're totally depraved, but we sin because... Why? Why do we sin? Okay, yeah, so we... But according to the Pelagian system, why do they think we sin? It's not because we're born sinners. We're born neutral. We're born so that we can go one way or the other. And then you say to them, well, if we're born, we go one way or the other. How come everybody's gone the wrong way? And they say, but we're born of ourselves neutral, but we've got bad examples. See, we've got bad and bad examples.
Well, what examples would have gone one way or the other then?
Well, everybody just went the wrong way. Follow bad example.
Roman Catholicism got original sin though, hasn't it? It is meant to be expurgated by baptism, so where does that come in?
It does have some an original sin. Yeah. Because they have Adam representing us in some sense. But the original sin of Roman Catholicism, it's a very light thing. You see, Roman Catholicism said we're born with a heart that's sinful. But that heart being sinful, that isn't itself sin. It's only actual acts that are sinful. And this is why in the homosexuality issue, look out for this one from some of the churches. They'll say homosexual acts are sinful, but not homosexual desires or lusts. That's not the biblical, that's not the Christian, that's not the Protestant view. That's essentially the Pelagian and Roman Catholic view. And sometimes you see a liberal Protestant church, and they'll say, we say homosexual acts are wrong. Listen very carefully. They've already deserted the Christian position. Because Jesus said it's wrong to lust after a woman in your heart. Imagine what lusting after a man would be. So now, given the fall of Adam in the Pelagian system, we're still in the image of God, though not the likeness of God, but we can strive and become in the likeness of God. And what we've got to do is avoid the bad example of everybody, try really hard, and we can do it. We can do it. In fact, Pelagius himself said, sinless perfection is possible, and it's not even that difficult. What planet was he on foot?
You can see from that viewpoint how people can marry evolutionism with some Christianity. Because in a sense he's saying, well, the evolution system tells you that you can become better.
You're right. The Pelagian system, if someone's going to be a theistic evolutionist and claim to be a Christian, he instinctively takes up the Pelagian system because they both have man evolving and becoming better. And that's historically what has happened. Now, how are we going to respond to all this? Fundamental to both views is that the image of God is one thing, and the likeness of God is something else. So how are we going to respond to this? Biblically, our method is this. Well, how does the Bible speak of the image of God? And how does it speak of the likeness of God? And lo and behold, we're going to find that they're essentially the same thing. Let's look at the various passages in the Bible. There are several in the opening chapters of Genesis. Genesis 1 verse 26. Genesis 1 verse 26, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Man was created in both the image and the likeness of God right from the start. He doesn't have to grow and become the likeness of God. He's made that way in the beginning. Then verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. And here we have the image of God being mentioned twice, but not the likeness of God. So what have you got in 26 and 27? God says, let's make man in our own image and in our likeness. So God's announcing what he's going to do. Then verse 27, he does it. And it says, God made man in his image and in the image of God. So to create man in the image and likeness of God, or to plan to create him in the image of God, or to say he's going to create him in the image and likeness of God, then it says he made man in the image of God. They're the same thing. Let's move to chapter 5. Genesis 5 verse 1. Genesis 5 verse 1. This is the book of the generations of Adam in the day that God created man. In the likeness of God created he him. A couple of things. Number one, in the very day that God created man, he was in the likeness of God. He didn't have to work for it for days or weeks or months or years. And then secondly, image of God isn't used here, but likeness of God is. So Genesis 1 verse 27 just uses the image of God. Man was made in the image of God. Genesis 5 verse 1 says man was made in the likeness of God. They're interchangeable. Then Genesis 5 verse 3 says that Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness. Here we're not dealing with the image of God, we're dealing with Seth being in the image of Adam. Image of Adam. And it's striking here that the word likeness is just used. Likeness or image. I mean, if you're gonna say there's a difference in the image, so was Seth made in the likeness of Adam, but not in the image of Adam? The two, again, are synonymous. Then let's go to Genesis 9, verse 6, the next reference. Genesis 9, verse 6. Genesis 9 verse 6, whoso sheddeth man's blood, By man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. The image of God made he man is speaking of man's being made in the image of God in Genesis 1, 26 and 27. So here we have the image of God. Sometimes it's simply said he's made the likeness of God. Sometimes it's said he's made the image and likeness of God. Interchangeable. And moving from the Old Testament, and all the Old Testament references to man's being in the image or likeness of God are found in the opening 9 chapters of Genesis. Moving to the New Testament, where would you expect to read in the New Testament of man in the image or likeness of God? What text would you go to? Think of last week. Remember, there were two classic texts. Colossians 3 verse 10. Colossians 3 verse 10. Colossians 3 verse 10 says, "You have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge, after the image of him that created him." Likeness isn't used, didn't need to be used. The two things are essentially the same. The other text is Ephesians 4 verse 24. But Ephesians 4 verse 24 doesn't actually use the word image or likeness. But yet it's dealing with the same thing. Because it talks about the new man, which is after God, essentially the same thing, is created. And then in righteousness and true holiness. And there were a couple of other New Testament texts which we should look at. 1 Corinthians 11 verse 7. 1 Corinthians 11 verse 7. Says, "A man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man." So their image of God is used. And if you go to James 3 verse 9, here the likeness of God is mentioned. Our AV renders it similitude, but it's the word likeness. Therewith, James 3 verse 9 is dealing with the tongue. Therewith bless we, believers, we bless God with the tongue, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made, literally have been made in regeneration, after the similitude or likeness of God. So believers are made in the image of God by the regeneration, and sometimes said they're made in the likeness of God. And when Adam was created, he was created in the image and likeness of God. And sometimes he was created after the image of God. And sometimes he was created after the likeness of God. The two are interchangeable. Why, though, why does the Bible use two different words? Is it to give Rome a handle or to make it difficult for Reformed Christians in the Belgian Confession class? What's the sense of this? I'm going to do some drawing here. This is always very risky. Well, here's what we're looking at. What does that image mean?
That's really
something. Oh, yeah, you get that, Philip. You always do well that round of the congregational quiz. I put you down for that one. Yep. It was phone a friend time at a phone you. So that's Ollie. That's the image of Ollie. Now, is that image of Ollie, the four interlocking rings, is that a likeness of an Ollie? Does an Ollie car look like four rings moving down the street?
No.
But it is the image of it. And for those who know car imagery, you see that, you think Ollie, right? Here's another one. I practiced in this one at home.
McDonald's.
Oh, only I had a yellow pen. I don't. That's McDonald's. Now, does that image look like a McDonald's fast food restaurant? No, it doesn't. But it is an image of it. And it's an image that's a sort of symbol. There are some images that do look like the thing they image, but they don't necessarily have to look like. That M looks no more like a fast food restaurant than those four rings look like an Audi motor car or any motor car, except you could say, well, maybe four rings, most cars are four wheels. Unless you came to the Bible study in a Reliant Robin. Yeah. So, that's it. So So man was made in the image of God. An image could be like the thing it looks like, but may not necessarily be. But when you say man was made after the image and likeness of God, that nails it down and says that man is an image of God in such a way that he is like God. Two words together make it more specific. It's not that the image of God equals natural gifts, and the likeness of God equals knowledge, righteousness, and true holiness. It's that the two words together make it more specific. Man being made after the image and likeness of God means that man reflects God as the very image and perfect likeness of God. So our criticism of the historic Roman Catholic division between the image of God and the likeness of God and the Pelagian division. By the way, I say the historic Roman Catholic just because Roman Catholic theologians, they differ so widely from each other, and things are constantly changing and in flux because of the modernism in Rome. You know, there's all sorts of Roman Catholic theologians who just pay no or little regard to historic Roman Catholic teaching anymore. But our criticism of this division between the image of God, the likeness of God as taught by the Pelagians, and historic Roman Catholicism is first of all exegetical, because the Bible makes no such distinction. And then secondly, that view is too low a view of the image of God, because neither the Pelagian position or the Roman Catholic position actually has the image of God consist in knowledge, righteousness, and holiness. It never did. Even in the beginning. And it never will. According to Roman Catholicism, the image of God is natural gifts. And the knowledge, righteousness, and holiness, that's the likeness of God, the donum superadditum, the superadded gift. According to Pelagianism, the image of God is natural gifts. And knowledge, righteousness, and holiness come with struggle. And that's the likeness of God. It's not actually the image of God at all. And then flowing from this, both those views have too low a view of the fall. Both in Roman Catholicism and Pelagianism, man still has free will. According to Romanism, man is weakened, he's sick, but he's not spiritually dead. According to Pelagianism, the fall only gives man a bad example. He's not born totally depraved at all. Now, biblically, man's state at creation before the fall is, as Genesis 1, 26 and 27 states, the image and likeness of God. Man images God by being in the very likeness of God, consisting of knowledge, righteousness, and holiness. And according to Genesis 1, verse 31, this image of God and everything else that God had made is called very good. Not just neutral, not just potentially very good, but already very good. And you may be familiar with Ecclesiastes 7, verse 29, often quoted in this regard, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. God made man upright in the image of God. Now, moving back to Belgic Confession, Article 14, in the second sentence, there are two key words which describe man's high position as created originally. Two words.
Honor and excellency.
Honor and excellency. Man is an honorable creature because he was made in the image of God. Man's excellency and even glory, according to 1 Corinthians 11 verse 7, is that he's made as a reflection in the very likeness of God. Now in this second sentence of Belgic Confession 14, we have man's first sin in Adam spoken of in three different aspects or ways. But being in honour, he understood it not, neither knew his excellency. And what aspect of the image of God is in mind there?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. He didn't understand. He didn't know his excellency. So man now is turning from a true prophet, knowledge characterizing a prophet, into a false prophet. According to the temptation, you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil, determining good and evil for yourselves. Like what our children are prone to do. They don't work out for themselves. And then the second part, he willfully subjected himself to sin, and consequently to death and the curse. He willfully subjected himself to sin.
If the first half of that sin does not suggest something missing, then, you know, obviously a fallibility, you know, how come he didn't understand it and know it?
We're back now to the fall of the devil. Remember when we did that? How come the devil fell? There wasn't even anybody to tempt him. And I, for one, don't know. Jonathan Edwards tried in his work on the bondage of the evil, and John Gerstner, who's a big fan of his, said that Edwards' attempt to show how a good creature could sin reminded him of a horse wallowing in the mud. As it thrashed and writhed to get out, it just dug itself deeper in. And he says, Edwards spent a lot of ink, but he didn't make it any clear. I don't intend to know what he got it at all. I just say I can't understand it. So the next part, that man willfully subjected himself to sin and consequently to death and the curse, I view that particularly as the denial of man's holiness. So instead of consecrating and subjecting himself to God, he subjects himself to sin. And that word willfully is interesting. Did Eve willfully subject herself to sin? There's a particular text you have to have in mind here.
Yeah, Timothy says she was deceived, and then Adam willfully.
Yeah. 1 Timothy 2 says that Eve was deceived. She didn't realize she was tricked. But Adam sinned with his eyes open, and he willfully sinned. He knew what he was doing. His was the sin of ignorance. And that word willfully too reminds me of a word in Romans chapter 8, speaking about the creation, that the creation did not willfully subject itself to sin, but Adam willfully sinned, and the creation, of which he was the head, was then led almost against its will. And I say almost against its will because it actually doesn't have a will, but against its will, as it were, was thrust under sin. And then the third part says that Adam gave ear to the words of the devil, put himself under the devil, and therefore lost his position of king and righteousness. And we read more fully about this in Genesis chapter 3. Adam, therefore, and all the human race in Adam, for he represented us, lost the image of God and the likeness of God. They lost both, which are essentially one, and instead took upon him, and we took upon us, the image of Satan. Total depravity. We're not righteous, we're not neutral, we're unrighteous. We don't know God in love, we hate God. And we're not consecrated to him in holiness, we are unholy. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do, and he was a murderer from the beginning. That's the fall. We're out of time, and we can say more about that, Lord willing, next week.